This is the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS. Now, here's Rick Preuss and Lee Cullen, a couple of guys that can only hope to be house trained.
We're back here with the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. And Rick, we have with us as a guest in the studio, a returning guest, Jamie McAloon-Lambman, the director of Ingham County Animal Control. Welcome back to the show, Jamie.
Oh, thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you back here. You must be one of the more popular people in this town, but not for the right reason, I'm sorry to say. But lots of stories in the newspaper about you.
Yeah, we've been very busy at the animal control.
Yeah, I would imagine. So, Jamie, I've got in front of me a story, and there's a quote that you gave for the story. It was about some of the brutality cases going on in the Lansing area. And the quote from you is, "This has been one of the most emotionally challenging years at animal control due to the nature of what you're dealing with." Can you explain to me what you are going through and what's happening down at animal control?
Well, sure. You know, it's been a rough year for the economy, and that definitely shows up at your local animal shelters. We do see a lot of animals coming in that people have to turn in. But this year, you know, our staff sees pain and suffering every single day. And that's not just our staff. That's staff of any animal welfare agency anywhere in the United States. But it's everyday pain and suffering, and it's not just the animals. It's the people who are also suffering as well. And that takes a real toll. I mean, compassion fatigue is a huge issue with animal shelter workers. We've seen a lot of animals coming in this year that really needed a lot of attention or care, whether, you know, seriously injured, abused, or dead when they arrived. I mean, it's very difficult, or close to death. I mean, and we've had animals that literally, you know, passed away on the way from the car into our medical room. I mean, it's difficult to see that day in and day out. And the cases that we're getting are pretty severe. And the neglect cases, and maybe that is a reflection on people didn't have the money, didn't have the funds, but I really don't use it. I don't think they can use that as an excuse, because at Animal Control, we have more services available to the community to help people keep their pets in good health than we've ever had before. And that's thanks to the community who supports those programs. Those are all based on donations, not counting tax dollars. But so to say that, you know, the economy is playing a role in these cases, yes, but that's not an excuse.
Well, I don't want to shock any of our listeners, but there have been a few cases in particular that have been highly notable, especially dealing with the breed of pit bulls, which we've had conversations about on the show and with you on this show. Can you explain exactly what's happened in case any of our listeners somehow didn't hear about it or read about it, or somehow, even though the stories did get an incredible amount of press, more so than you usually see for animal-related stories?
Well, and I think it's because they both happen so quickly close together. Two pit bulls, two totally separate cases, one in which a dog was found by a citizen walking his dog. The dog was bound, duct-taped around the mouth. Taped around the mouth. Feet were bound, and that dog would have frozen to death, certainly if that person had not found that dog when he did. Within probably 2 days of that, we had another case. It was 2 days, because that first dog was on a Wednesday, and the next case was on a Friday. Another individual called to report a dog kennel in a park had been there for a couple of days. When we investigated it, there was indeed a dog inside that had been frozen. When we did the necropsy on that dog, we found evidence of how it died and so on. And rewards were offered in both these cases. In the case of the dog that was found in the crate in Ingham Park, the reward rose to over $5,500. We did not get any leads based that brought us to the individual who was responsible, but we did find the individual. And those charges have been submitted to the prosecutor, and we hope to see those charges issued this week, we hope.
Interesting. And Jamie, you say that the reward got up to $5,500. In reading through the stories, it sounds like that money did not come from animal control. It came from outside volunteers putting up their own money. Is that something that is very useful to you, or would those funds be better used if diverted to other areas such as investigation and other things that you do?
Well, most of the people that made the commitment to the reward have not given that those funds to animal control. They have made the commitment that if you find this person and you've got a person you have to pay the reward to, we're going to commit to this portion. But yeah, we offered $300 of that $5,500 to tell you what the citizens thought. We have, I think there are two individuals alone that offered $1,000 each. So people are very adamant that, you know what, we're not going to tolerate animal abuse in our community and we are going to fine you. And I think that's what that spoke to. We are going to fine you and we are going to prosecute you. We will not have it in Ingham County, which it's very rewarding for us because we're overwhelmed, understaffed, limited resources. And to have that kind of encouragement just makes you go a little bit harder and a little bit longer to make sure you're going to find that person.
Well, and you were mentioning that there's other ways that the people that are listening can get involved, even financially. You were talking that in the recent cutbacks, things have changed a bit, and and you don't have the same vehicle for financial, you know, investigation. Can you comment a little bit on that? That's really important.
We have an officer dedicated just to animal cruelty investigation. Last year, because of budget cuts, that position was cut.
Right.
So we were able to bring it back with donations.
Okay.
We have an animal cruelty fund that pays for the animal cruelty investigator.
Wow.
And that's Officer Lombardi, and she's absolutely amazing. And she worked really hard with another officer to make sure that the case with the dog in the park was investigated fully, and they did an amazing job. And then we have officers that also did the other case involving Tatiana, in which we feel that we have that individual as well, and those charges should be submitted soon.
Well, you know, it almost sounds like they're the true sense of generosity. I'm willing to work for tips. Just let me investigate. Let me find out what went wrong.
Yeah.
So, and the money that has been brought up, it just seems like that's kind of an amplifier. You get in the public eye with these type of cases so that now people know that there's actual cruelty. And then when you get all these extra funds rolling in, it just puts a lot more public attention to it, doesn't it?
Well, if they donate towards the Animal Cruelty Fund, that absolutely helps us do a better job. It helps us have the resources to go out and investigate. I mean, a necropsy is hundreds of dollars that you have to do on these animals, if the ones that expire. The forensic work is a lot. I mean, you know, we did fingerprinting. I mean, we did everything. I mean, those things cost money in addition to the amount of time. A lot of hours went into the investigations.
Now, both of these cases, are they typical or atypical of what you see on a week-to-week, month-to-month, year-to-year type situation?
They're not unusual. That's the sad part.
Yeah.
That is the sad part.
That's what I'm wondering. They just got a lot of attention.
They got a lot of attention. Well, because we felt we could find the person. And sometimes we find the person right away.
Now, Jamie, I have a question. One of the things that I noticed in the story is you said that you noticed in extreme animal cruelty cases that there was a lot of drug and alcohol abuse as well as domestic violence. Tell me about that. How is that playing into this whole story?
Well, normally we do see drugs being dealt out of many of the homes of the cases that we are dealing with animal cruelty. That's almost hand in hand, almost every time. Drugs. Mm. We do see domestic violence, child abuse going on in those same homes. Many of the perpetrators have outstanding warrants already for them. Mm-hmm. And that was the case in one of these as well. I mean, so these people are not, you know, your good citizen of the day for sure. So when you're approaching that door, you don't know if they've got outstanding warrants for drugs, firearms. Often they have firearms in the home. And we don't carry firearms. Our officers don't. So, I mean, they're knocking on doors of individuals that, drug units are after as well. Not just us, but a lot of other people. And one of the good things I love about our job is that we are able to put people away that other units of law enforcement have been after for years and have been successful in nailing them. And we've been able to do it. And it's very rewarding to know that our officers do such a tight case that their cases don't get kicked out.
And the one thing I was thinking about, you also mentioned abuse and domestic abuse and violence. Again, there's some, you know, person, oftentimes female, that's in the company of these individuals that's probably kind of trapped, much like some of these puppies were, dogs were, and you have an opportunity to open that door as well. Can you comment a little bit on that? Because in my opinion, animals are really important, but people and these type of scenarios are even far beyond, because that's you and me, that's us.
Yeah. Well, some of these, in some of these cases, these animals are family members to the spouse or the girlfriend and the children, and they're used as a tool. They're used as a tool to keep them in the house or to keep them in line.
Torment.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. So they will do to the animal and suggest that that's what will be done to the child or the spouse if they don't straighten out.
Yeah.
So it's not unusual at all for the actual spouse or the girlfriend to not give us information because she fears what will happen to her, even though, I mean, she's mortified and sick about what happened to the animal.
Yeah,
that's not unusual.
A lot of times you get in a lot of other services besides yourselves.
Oh, yes.
You know, social services that can help in these situations,
yeah.
I hope.
We're often networking, communicating with child abuse advocates, and we're sending up our reports to them. They're sending their reports to us. I mean, they're going into homes and they're seeing absolute squalor with children, but they're also seeing the animals, and these people love animals, and so they're reporting to us that you need to get over there and look into this. And sometimes what we do with the animals can be more effective than what they can do. I mean, it's kind of strange, but we're able to get more into these homes than they can sometimes,
that's great.
And we can get changes done immediately.
That's great. And again, for the listening audience, there's an opportunity to donate in such a way at the actual animal control that would support this type of services. So for those that are listening that would like to help, you don't need to just give rewards. There's actually a long-term reward by getting into this kind of funding the investigation.
It's
correct?
The animal cruelty fund. It's restricted just to animal cruelty efforts, investigations and equipment and supplies, things like that.
Interesting. Jamie, let's try and climb into this and unpack it a little bit more if we can, because part of the problem has got to be that there are just people who don't know how to care for certain dogs, or they don't know what they're in for. I'm trying to understand, what is it that causes people to do this? I mean, is it just purely mental illness, or is it just that they get frustrated because in some instances they don't realize that they've gotten themselves a very high-strung animal when all they can tolerate is essentially a lay-around lap dog? Is that part of the problem, or what else is it?
Well, there's two kinds of abuse. There's passive abuse and there's active abuse. Active abuse is going to be your malicious intent, torture, things like that. Your passive is going to be, well, they didn't get out there every day to feed it, but they fed it once in a while, or they saw it getting sick and they meant to get it to the vet, but they didn't have time, they didn't have money, they didn't have a car that day, but yet they knew it was suffering, but they still did nothing about it. You know, I mean, it's still abuse. But it depends on which abuse you have as to explain why they did it.
By percentage, at least with respect to you spending time out there in the field, what percentage of your cases kind of go more towards passive, and what tends to be more of an active?
Oh, I would say by far it's probably 80% passive.
That's what I would think.
Yeah, it's about 80% passive.
Because there's a lot more yards out there with a lot more animals that aren't trying to, you know, do drug deals or fight dogs or anything like that. They're just, they have this pet and don't realize what to do.
It can be ignorance. It can be economics. It can be the way they were raised. I mean, that's often what we see. I mean, if you look at their lifestyle, it's consistent with their own lifestyle. I mean, they haven't cleaned their house in a month or 2 months or 6 months. You know, their children don't even have shoes on and they're outside in the snow. You know, I mean, it's really look at their lifestyle and the way they were raised. And so you have to try to educate and help. And that does go a long way. It really does. And of course, the enforcement piece, you know, the long arm of the law really helps us a lot. So we use those two together, and it can be very effective, and that animal stays in that home and is cared for.
Okay.
Well, and it also goes back to, Rick, what we've talked about on this show for over a year now, which is, again, investigating the breed before you get involved with it, because a lot of these rescue groups are not afraid to tell you exactly what it is that you're getting into. And same thing with, I'm sure, yourselves and the Humane Society. When you're releasing a dog, it's a pretty tight screening process.
And people understanding and educating themselves would go a long way in making sure that animals are cared for properly. But the majority of the people that we have the problems with aren't getting their animals from rescue groups or humane societies or animal shelters that have a screening process. They're getting them from the paper. They're getting them from the backyard breeder at the Walmart in the box and, you know, at the store. So they're not getting them from people who are going to have a conversation with them about, well, you know, what is the dynamics of your family? How much time do you have? Mm-hmm. You know, they're getting them because they're free, they're cool, or always wanted one, but, you know, couldn't have one when I was living with my parents, you know, that sort of thing.
And do you see any end in sight, if you know what I'm saying? I mean, that just seems to me like, you know,
an insurmountable hill.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know what I mean? And yet the flip side to it is you don't want to necessarily govern the transfer of these animals back and forth. Yeah. But at the same time, you're asking, right now I hear mm-hmm. it, you're asking for a more conscientious populace.
Sure.
How do we have a more conscientious populace? How do we stop the madness without make it mandatory to be less mad?
Well, you know, education awareness, I know those are pretty general answers, but, you know, that is the answer. Spay neuter, of course, is the answer, you know, because the reason we have so many pit bulls is because there are so many people out there breeding their pit bulls. I mean, I'm just amazed at how many people, when they redeem their dog, say, well, I'm not, because we try to get them to spay or neuter it through our pit stop program, and they're like, no, I want it to have a litter puppy. So then we have that conversation. Well, you know, this dog will be healthier if it doesn't, blah, 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 blah. And they do stop and think for a moment, and we might get maybe 10% of those people to say, oh, yeah, I'll do that, you know. But the rest of them, they want to have more puppies, and they think they're going to make money selling them, which is, mm-hmm. you know, ridiculous. If you really take care of that animal, you're not going to make any money.
No, actually, and we've talked with a number of breeders who they've got beautiful stock, and they all make the same comment, which is it's a labor of love. It's not a labor of money, as a general rule.
Absolutely.
Jamie, let me ask this question. When it comes to this whole process, one of the issues is identifying the owners and associating them with these abused dogs. Can you talk with me about licensing and the other ways that can help you in terms of making that positive identification so that someone can be ultimately held responsible for an animal which is under their ownership or control?
Well, licensing is a very valuable tool in a community. If a community is going to have effective enforcement of, you know, dogs not being out in the streets, running loose, attacking people, you really have to have a good spay-neuter program, an education program, and a licensing program. And licensing helps to identify these dogs because it's the only tool we have to be on their property to say, do you have a license? Who's the owner of the dog? And if nobody owns the dog, well, then we're taking it.
Right.
You know, so we're taking it because, of course, they all say, I don't own it. I don't know where it got here. Well, then we're taking the dog. And then the owner does come in and claim that dog, or they don't, you know. But it certainly does. It's a starting point for us to get some sort of handle on who's got what and what can we do to help you to get the animal fixed.
Mm. Now, why are they claiming they don't own the dog if they're then going to come back and actually license the dog? Or
because they didn't think we were going to take it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You were just going to leave it there, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Rick, we're going to continue this conversation, and we're going to bring in Julia Palmer from the Capital Area Humane Society right here at the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS and 1320WILS.com.